what should be done by one who is skilled in goodness and who knows the path of peace. Let them be able and upright, straightforward and gentle in speech, humble and not conceited, contented and easily satisfied, unburdened with duties, and frugal in their ways, peaceful and calm, and wise and skillful, not proud and demanding in nature. Let them not do the slightest things that the wise would later reprove, wishing in gladness and in safety, may all beings be happy, whatever living beings they may be, whether they are weak or strong, or meeting none, the great or the mighty, medium, short or small, the seen and the unseen, those living near and far away, those born and to be born, may all beings be happy. Let none deceive another, or despise any being in any state. Let none through anger or ill will wish harm upon another, even as a mother protects with her life her child, her only child. So with a boundless heart should one cherish all living beings, radiating kindness over the entire world, spreading upwards to the skies and downwards to the depths, outwards and unbounded, free from hatred and ill will, whether standing or walking, seated or lying down, free from drowsiness. One should sustain this recollection. This is said to be the sublime abiding, by not holding to fixed views, the pure-hearted one, having clarity of vision, being freed from all sense desires, is not born again into this world.
Okay, so what I'll do is, actually we'll do the preamble. So with the meditation practice overall, what are we actually aiming for and what do we hope to achieve in the course of this endeavor? So all of you, the vast majority of you are usually, say regular practitioners, maybe if you have time to do a little bit of practice every day. And so what do we see, like, over time, as we undertake this training of the mind? What do we actually see with the effects on our personality, on our thoughts and our feelings? And naturally, once the meditation starts to bite, and you can see the effects of what the kind of progress that you're making. So we basically, with the meditation practice, you're looking at, say, like a retraining of attention. So every single one of us, we utilize attention in order to think, in order to problem solve, in order to conduct our daily life with our activities. Because once you stop thinking, you're basically like immobile. If your mind doesn't move, you're either dead or you're in deep meditation. So in our normal state of consciousness, when the mind actually moves, you are moving to thought. You are moving to a thinking process, and your thinking process is driven by your feelings. And so when a person is very, very cool, very emotionally cool, internally, because you may not always see it. People have very deep meditation, a very, very calm and peaceful internally, but they can still project a very, very high level of, say, mental energy. Can be very, even potentially, they can appear dynamic, emotional, there's a degree of speed and very effectiveness with the mind. But so, with the effect of the meditation, so with that retraining effect, you'll see a gradual, say, slowing down of the thinking process and a greater stability with one's emotional experience, because you're developing this like a stabilization effect over time, like a centering, balancing effect. Because if you allow your with the average person in society, you just allow your attention to go all over the place, that your personality, the forcefulness of your personality, can persist over many, many years. So, so for example, we could have a particular person, if we don't practice at all, that the forcefulness of the personality, the preferences, the energy behind their likes and dislikes can sustain to a large degree through the course of their lives. So you may not, with the average person, you may not see any real underlying, say, peacefulness or contentment, emotional stability, or even say like a kind of reflective state of mind. Meditation in itself is, as many of you know, very, very quite a simple practice. Not so easy to do, but it's the skill of meditation, which helps you to develop and to get good results. And with all the disciples, I always put emphasis on developing skill in meditation practice. Never ever do the practice, whatever tools that you're using, whatever the way you use different meditation applications, just watch very, very closely how the mind responds. Because the mind is very, very complicated, emotionally complicated. We have many, many attachments, and you actually have to see what works for you in the long term. Every single one of us, we have very, very complicated karma within ourselves, between ourselves and other people. And so this practice, we develop this over time, especially over several years. Many of you develop this a much more sensitive, intuitive feel with your day-to-day experience. You have a much greater understanding of life, and it's easily at the five-year mark. If you practice every day, you should easily see it. Even after a year, you should start to see things that the average person they just miss. They just don't cotton on. Meditation does make people quite like aware of the way the mind works, and the way people's body language, the way they walk and talk. The whole principle of the practice, developing, so with this simple practice, with the underlying factors are developing a sense of peacefulness, contentedness, maybe a little bit of joy when the energy starts to roll, emotional stability, and the ability to like emotional intelligence, the ability to relate to and understand other people to a greater degree. Because if your personality is very, very strong, very, very forceful, you may not be able to perceive other people very, very clearly. If your personality is very, very strong, you're basically going to have a personal bias when you're trying to relate to and understand other people. It all depends. There's a mix of faculties. It's not absolutely cut in stone. But if you've got that very, very, very your mind is quiet, you've got this kind of sensitivity, intuition, an increased peripheral awareness, you have a greater understanding of where people are at and where they're coming from. Everyone, with all people, we all do things for a reason. That's like the motivation behind human beings' behavior. But one of the crucial things with the practice is the insight and understanding. The higher principle within after meditation is coming to an understanding of the human mind and the world around you. You know, you don't want a situation where you die as ignorant as the day you were born. It's a bit of an exaggeration, but if that's the case, it may be a complete waste of a person's life. You know, I saw, for example, when I was out on the road, with this particular individual, he would have learned, you know, from travelling, from spending years and years fruit picking, but unfortunately was a very, very heavy drinker, and there was like measurable brain damage. But when we left that person, you know, when we left him here, the campsite where we were staying, we were in central New South Wales, he was collapsed over the steering wheel of his vehicle at the side of the road. And you think to yourself, with that kind of lifestyle, it's something which actually slows you down. It can sort of take the edge off your your capabilities and whatnot. So what we're aiming at with the regardless of whether you have a leaning towards Christianity, Hinduism, or if you're a Muslim practitioner, it doesn't make any difference the fraternity that people come from, that through the meditation practice that you develop a deeper understanding of one's own faith and the people around you. So, you know, if you're a regular meditator, the tendency is that you are a better Christian, a better Hindu, Buddhist, and potentially a better Muslim person. Because, you know, the vast majority of Muslim people are good citizens, the vast majority. What I'll do with the session is just something slightly different. This is a little technique for people who just can't go to the breath meditation straight away. And this is actually recommended by one of the lay disciples. And I've tried it. It's quite useful, and it's very, very easy to work with. All it is once the lights go down, we focus on the darkness in the mind. So that as we close our eyes, when the lights are low, we close our eyes, you see that black space, you know, that blackness of space in the mind, and you just focus on that as an object, and that actually draws your attention away from thoughts, from feelings. It seems to be, I've never really thought about it deeply, but as soon as I did that, it was like very, very sort of effortless. Hopefully for you it might be effortless as well. So, but just give it a spin, because it's a very neutral object, and it draws attention away from thoughts and feelings on that dark space in the mind. And then so we'll do that for say 4 or 5 minutes, and then we'll go to the breathing meditation, and then we'll split it up. We'll do for example, we'll do 10 minutes. On a broad focus on the full chest to get grounded, and then we'll do the last 15 minutes on the focusing on the mouth with the breath on the periphery, so it's much more sharp. People need to use a fairly sharp focus, because comfortable focus, because if you don't, it takes much longer to get the peacefulness of mind. So please get yourself in a comfortable position with the back straight, head upright and comfortable, nothing tied around the waist, around the wrist or the neck section, and make sure you can breathe fully into the chest and to the base of the abdomen. And it helps to have the knees and the ankles crossed, you know, drawing the attention inwards. So for the next 5 minutes, so just as we close your eyes, and that blackness, that black space that you see inside the mind, I just want you to focus your attention in a very relaxed way on that blackness in the mind. So as you focus on that blackness in the mind, just try to relax both physically and emotionally. across to the breathing meditation. So we'll be focusing on the feelings of breathing in and out of the full chest, so between the throat and the belly button. If you feel the breath coming in and out of the body, focus on those feelings between the throat and the belly button as you breathe in and out for the next, say, 10 minutes. So as you breathe, breathe right down to the slow deep breaths, right down to the base of the abdomen to increase alertness. Find that you're a little bit sleepy, you can open your eyes to keep yourself awake. or narrow the focus down. So I want you to focus on the feelings around the mouth section. So just focus on the feelings around the mouth, and you'll feel the breath on the periphery. And the reason I do this is that the feelings are quite strong, quite tangible, very clear, and it's a very comfortable, so like a fairly sharp but comfortable focus that you can maintain without great difficulty. We'll do that for the rest of the session. you find that you're still thinking excessively, then apply, say, the like insight, wisdom. Try to understand what you're going through, the mind state, and look at those thoughts and those feelings, and just try to understand everything about them, about that particular person, events. Could be anything. And because the more you understand these things, then the mind relaxes, because you're teaching the mind relaxes and lets go, and the one's attention drops down to a deeper state of peacefulness. So we're coming towards the end of meditation. Now ring the gong 3 times, you can open your eyes when you're ready. Could you explain? Actually, is there any questions on the meditation at all? Any questions? Before we move on to profound matters. Okay. Please, please. Yeah, I mean, Western doctors, unless they're meditators, may not necessarily have a handle on it, because when you meditate, you get physiological changes. What would you call it? With a heart rhythm, heart rate, maybe even peripheral circulation. Because when you meditate, you're actually affecting the circulation and the quality of your chi as well. People who meditate, they tend to look healthier than people who don't practice at all. So the benefits from meditation, especially if you've been meditating for well over a couple of months, 3 months, 6 months, and you can actually see the difference. If you have two people with maybe similar lifestyles, backgrounds, you can actually see the difference between the people who meditate and people who don't, not just physically but emotionally. And what might be if you get good results. I mean, usually like Asian doctors might have a better understanding, but it's true. Sometimes Western medicine, it doesn't always understand the big picture. You know, there's certain things that they know and they test and they can relate to and they can predict and all this kind of stuff, but there's some things they may not understand very well at all. Yep.
Can you elaborate on what you meant in regards to the breath?
Watching the breathing, or
no? Is it kind of where you gently watching the breathing?
The experience of breathing, or
yeah.
What I think the easiest way is when you do the breathing meditation, focus on the feelings. So the sensations, the feelings of breathing in and out. So whether you watch the full chest or whether you watch, like even the at the tummy, because you've got expansion, contraction, the rise and fall of the abdomen, that might be more tangible for some people. Some people may find that the feelings in the full chest might be a little bit light. In the abdomen, they're definitely a bit more forceful. But you can experiment with it. Some people who focus in the center of the chest, but each person will see where is the right location. So you can go very broad for 5 minutes, full chest for 5 minutes, and then go to the abdomen for 5 minutes, and then maybe the center of the chest for 5 minutes, and then go to focus on the mouth section. Yeah, focus on. You don't go to the nose tip. Focus on the feelings around the mouth, because it's very clear. The sensations are very clear. And I do this a lot. I do it all, whenever I sit meditation. That's what I usually do. And then just see what works for you. Because it's like your feelings. You focus on the feelings in the body. Everyone else okay? Could you explain how reincarnation works, please? So reincarnation, that's essentially like a Hindu term. We don't use that term very often in Buddhist practice. And so within the Hindu tradition, within the Hindu tradition, they use that word reincarnation, where the individual, the person's consciousness, transmigrates, move from life to life to life to life, until they eventually go back to their creator, what they consider to be like the Atman, the Hindu perception of the Almighty God, creator of the universe. That's the Hindu Atman. And so the person's consciousness, which is like a little spark of the divine, reunites with the Godhead, the Almighty Force, the Almighty energy, the divine essence of the universe. So that's the Hindu, you're purified, your mind in deep jhana. The Hindu tradition has a limited, it's still quite a good teaching, but it doesn't have the full business. The Hindu practitioners, and I've met many of them, they're very, very good people. Probably virtually all of them that I've met within the religious, within the spiritual community, very, very good people. And but the Hindu perspective, it's not the full perspective. The Buddhist perspective covers everything. It's the big picture. But with the Hindu tradition, you're aiming at what they call oneness with God, is essentially full one-pointed absorption in very, very profound meditation. So that is the realization of God. In the Hindu and the Muslim tradition, but it correlates exactly to that state of one incredibly profound, deep-pointed meditation. which is necessary for you need that as a basis, that state of very profound samadhi. You need that if you're aiming to get enlightened within the Buddhist tradition. You need that as a basis for very, very deep insight and wisdom practice. And that state of God, in deep meditation, realization of God, there's enough power in that state to get you, eventually to get you fully enlightened. You've got enough clarity, sharpness, enough brilliance of mind, enough depth to take you all the way through the four stages to full enlightenment. And that's really saying something. It's not to be underestimated. With upachara samadhi, where the mind is absolutely still, but it's not still at that full, that where the jhana factors at full strength. I won't get too complicated, but upachara, some of you are familiar, where the mind is still, there's no thinking process at all. You need that to get to the first level of enlightenment, but with that full samadhi, you can go right through and you can basically finish the Buddhist path completely. You think? Yeah. So with the Buddhist take on this principle. So within the Hindu tradition, these words like say reincarnation, Atman, oneness with God, and with the Buddhists. That's a very, very necessary step for deep insight. So we call it like a state of very profound samadhi, a very deep state of meditation. And but with that, so that's the final point for the Hindu and Muslim tradition. But with us, that is a major stepping stone to realization of the path. So instead of going maybe like one third of the way, roughly, you know, you want to basically go all the way, and you want to finish all states of rebirth completely. Because it's all very nice to get these very deep states of samadhi, the deep states of peacefulness, tranquility, but they are not a sure thing. It's possible for people to develop these states. Not so easy, but the potential is there. Especially, you know, you really need seclusion. Like, you really need to live alone for many years. You know, probably at the back of Thailand or Sri Lanka. I just come back from Thailand, and I saw some very nice places where Western people would have a potential. And but with the Buddhist perspective, you want to basically put an end to karma and rebirth, that word rebirth, completely. And then when you do that, that's the end of the Buddhist path. Is there a topic you wanted to talk about? Anything at all? Our man?
Ajahn, could you explain for the beginners and the blank amateurs amongst us, like us and me, how much should they start to meditate when they first start out?
For the raw beginners,
yeah.
I'd say at least 5 minutes. If you're just full on, you're really really busy, which most people are. Minimum 5 minutes, and if you feel comfortable with it, maybe even like a minute or 2 minutes here and there. You know, so for example, you've got a lunch hour. There's nothing wrong with just watching one's breathing quietly for a minute or two. It doesn't slow people down too much. Sometimes it makes them a little bit sharper, more alert. And something I always recommend, I always say this, is this one mantra per minute, which meditators can find very, very useful. So you just do one mantra. It can be any mantra you like, Jewish, Muslim, Hindu, Buddhist, whatever you like, Sanskrit, a couple of words, usually a couple of words is better to get some focus, some stability, and you just do that one time every 60 seconds all day and night. If you're really interested in meditation, you might find that very useful, because you'll get this background samadhi, and it will be there all day, all night. Except when you're sleeping. You may even see it when you're sleeping, because the mind will be a bit quieter. But from background samadhi, there's enough focus there, enough stillness, enough peace for contemplation. And for any of you who are really interested in meditation and want to see how far what this thing can do, this little practice, very simple, very easy practice. Even if in the beginning, even if you can only remember every 2 or 3 minutes, it's okay, because eventually you'll get it down within 10 seconds. It's a skill, and any of you will get it down within 10 seconds either way of a 1 minute time span. You do it for 7 days, and I can guarantee you, you'll get it down within 10 seconds. And you just do it. It can be anything. It can be Om Mani Padme Hum. It can be Arahant. It could be things like the universe is changeable. It could be something like, it could be like the universe is love, or whatever resonates with you, whatever's important to you. A couple of syllables, and then as your mind, the Tibetans actually, this is an interesting point. The Tibetan practitioners, whenever and the you know the people who are really really focused on personal development, and whenever their mindfulness slips, or whenever they make a little maybe a little mistake, or they make a little slip with their precepts, or they forget something, or this or that little, you know, little stuff. They do their mantra Om Mani Padme Hum. So right through the course of the day, if my mind slips, if I almost trip over, or if I forget something, or I drop something, they do their little mantra, and they bring the mind back to recollection, to mindfulness. So
like an anchor.
Yeah, anchor. They're anchoring. They're drawing the mind back to their spiritual mantra. So every time, say if I walk out of this room, and I bump the table, or I trip over my sandals, or whatnot, just little stuff. They do that to increase their awareness, recollection. It's quite a nice little practice, but you'll find you do this constantly, and then it works really well. I've done this for days and days on end.
And what does Om Mani Padme Hum mean?
Homage. It was something like homage to the lotus in the heart, something like that.
Yeah.
Homage to the lotus in the heart, that's the closest closest interpretation I can think of.
At the end of the evening, can you do the chant for us?
Yeah, why not? Did you find it online?
Well, no, you didn't?
Yours,
actually.
Eh?
I just listened to yours.
Okay. It's not as good as the ones online. But the business out there at that point, about the with the meditation, as you know, a minimum of 5 minutes, and practice as much as you can, but usually with just so you're sharp, don't do it right before you go to work. But little meditations, 5 minutes is okay. Sometimes people find if they meditate for 30 minutes an hour, it might slow them down, and especially if you're in a very crucial position, if you're working in a hospital, or if you're a social worker, a policeman, or a prison officer, where you need to be basically sharp on the ball and you can't make mistakes. Just keep it short, maybe 5 minutes. You know, you can still make you, even 5 minutes can actually increase your cerebral performance. But with the monks, and once the monks start meditating for like several hours, it definitely can start to slow you down. It can affect your memory. And these days, people have got to be very careful with their, especially with their work, because there's more and more pressure on people these days that they've got to perform.
So we shouldn't do it at the traffic lights then.
Personally, I wouldn't, unless you're very confident. If you're on your super bike, I personally wouldn't.
Do you think it would help with dementia?
Sorry, with what?
Dementia, would it have any
experience? I would say you could measure it. If you had a person meditating for 3 months, I'd be confident that you could measure a difference in the person's cerebral performance, speed, memory, reaction times, all this kind of thing. I can guarantee it.
There's a history of dementia in the family, so
yeah, it definitely is, because when they develop their quality of attention, because with people who have very good memories, memory, to give you an idea, the Buddha said that people who have incredible recollection, incredible power of memory, it's related to samadhi, and samadhi is the ability to focus and hold your attention. In the suttas, the Buddha said that the key to memory power is the suppression of the five hindrances, which is those things within the thinking process. So when your mind is very, very still in samadhi, and if you can get your mind into, say, jhana, then, or even upachara samadhi, then you've got enough stillness and focus and sharpness of mind to recollect past lives. I've been told this by meditation masters in Thailand, and I wouldn't doubt it. And so the deeper and more profound your meditation is, the greater your potential for ability, like outstanding ability with memory power. My father had a friend who had a photographic memory. It's quite, the dynamics were quite interesting, because he was quite an expressive but a little bit of an egotistical person. He felt this kind of sense of power and authority with this photographic memory that he had, and it was really, really quite very good. Almost, I wouldn't say 100%, but you know, I mean, probably 97, 98, and that's everything that he read and studied, say roughly maybe 97, 98. And my father found him very good in conversation, very interesting, he felt superior, and he felt that he was a cut above, you know, other people, even professional people. Even when he was at the steelworks, you know, when he was working in engineering, he could really, really hold his own. But the dynamics were that you've got to have potential. You know, so with that kind of memory power, you've got to have potential with meditation. You don't get this kind of ability unless you've developed ability. I mean, really significant ability with meditation. But I never asked him if he ever meditated at any point in his life. But you need that for that, for photographic memory. You need deep meditation for that kind of those kind of skills. You don't get it. It doesn't come out of the blue. You don't get that for nothing. You've got to put the courses in.
You don't think it's come back from his last life?
I could guarantee it. I mean, I wouldn't know, but I can guarantee it, because I've been around this for so long, and I've been in connection with forest masters in Thailand, and just examples, stories, this and that, and you could virtually guarantee it. It's meditation power. This is why the power of recollection is so strong in the current life. Even though he was quite, he wasn't a peaceful. The dynamics were quite interesting. He wasn't a peaceful person. His mind was always active, but it was very fast. His mind was speedy, but he used to drink a lot of coffee. He used to drink nothing incredible, maybe half a dozen cups, but every single day, instant coffee, and he wouldn't stop. He would talk and talk and talk and talk all day, all night, and my father would have to push him out the front door at 1 a.m. because my dad was on day shift and had to get up at 6:30 at the very latest. So it was a bit of a contradiction. He wasn't peaceful, but he had this incredible focus, and the mind was sharp and fast. The underlying, the factors were there, you could see it, but he wasn't peaceful, but everything else was there. Speed, sharpness, the ability to isolate, the ability to pinpoint, really pinpoint accuracy, blueprint detail. Really smart. His emotional intelligence, emotional intelligence wasn't at the same level, because he created problems for his partner.
You never explained what happens about reincarnation.
The difference, or
no? What happens? How does it work?
The process.
Yeah.
Yes. The way it works, without getting too complicated, is that which moves from life to life is human consciousness. So human consciousness, which contains, in a nutshell, all the good karma, all the good, bad, you know, for choice of better words, good, bad, neutral karma that you make during your life, it colours your mind, it shapes the quality of your mind, and your quality of mind at death, not only this life, but past lives, but the current life, has the most powerful effect and determines the quality of your rebirth in the next life. So your stream, without getting too complicated, the stream of consciousness is like, the analogy is like the thread running through a circle of pearls. So you have a pearl necklace, nice big pearl necklace, and your consciousness is, the stream of consciousness is like the thread running through the pearls, running from life to life, just going round and round and round and round, up and down, in the levels of rebirth. It's like the circle. And so what we're aiming at, so the, yeah, that's that quality of consciousness. So as meditators, as Buddhists, as religious people, we're aiming at becoming, say, you know, like good people, good qualities, and especially the wisdom faculty, make the wisdom faculty as sharp and as, you know, as comprehensive as possible, because that is the leading principle. That's what really gives you, in the rebirth process, that's what really protects you and gives the ability, which would take you, it will take you high. The stronger your wisdom and insight, the greater your potential to go high in the rebirth process. That will be the leading principle. That is the peak of the pyramid. You have the three main areas, the sila and the samadhi, the tranquility, peaceful meditation. Then you have the wisdom faculty. And that is the most important thing that you can develop as a human being. Did that make any sense?
Yeah. Can one choose?
Choose what?
The next one. The next life.
There's a degree. The Buddha said in the suttas, and I believe this is a fact, that if you, within your own mind, if you have a very, very strong intention. So if you, every single day, if you said within your own mind, and you're not playing around, I want to be, if I had the supporting karma, because you don't just get it out of, it just doesn't come out of nowhere. If you've got the supporting karma and you make your mind very firm and focused, I want to be reborn in a certain world, or I want to be reborn with my family members in my next life, and through the power of intention, the direction of your mind, you're moving, your mind is moving in a certain direction, and you sustain that every single day. You say that, you only got to say it once, but if you say it every day for the rest of your life, that is going to have power and weight to lead your mind in that direction, because your mind is led by through intention. So if you have that intention, your mind will go in that direction.
Similarly, you can say, I don't want to be born with my family.
Why not? Don't you love your brothers and sisters?
But definitely it's an intention.
Yeah.
Anything happens with intention.
Yeah, that was, so what you think. What you think.
Yes.
Yeah, so you know, so your physical body your physical body is a vehicle for your five senses. And so you're for your five senses and your mind. So physical body, you have your five senses, ear, eye, nose, tongue, body. You have your sense experience, the world coming in through your senses into your mind, and that's where one stores one's personal, where one's karma lies, and where one generates karma. Is there any other questions?
Ajahn, earlier tonight you were talking about an acquaintance who had a drinking problem and the fruit picker, I believe. I'm wondering what you, when you said it was a bit of a waste, like of a life, how do you quantify that? Is that quantified by the amount of depth and thinking that person does, or is it quantified by more like their life experience?
We knew him over the course of about 4 weeks, and I wouldn't say, if you want to be very specific, I wouldn't say a waste of a life, but he was definitely compromised. So I don't like saying talking about other people in this way, but he was a heavy drinker, and there's reasons for this, but he was brain damaged as well. And when we left him, he was passed out over the wheel of the vehicle, and the vehicle was halfway off the road. And my brother, I said, look, you know, maybe we should check, make sure that he's okay. He could have had a heart attack or anything. And my brother, we were just about to leave. We were heading back to New South Wales, and we could see he was still breathing, and his friends were still at the campsite. But if he was in danger, we definitely would have gone. Even if we had to take him to hospital, we would have gone to his aid. But he was right near his campsite where his mates were, and my brother, he just didn't want to get involved, you know. So we moved on. But you know, your people are compromised, so you know, I don't blame if a person's in that situation. There's probably very, very good reasons. If you talk to them about family, this and that, you know, might be very good reasons. And but people have choices. So, for example, we've got, you know, people I've met and people in the prison system. No matter how poor your upbringing, how compromised, how financially poor, rich, wealthy, opportunities, all the factors which make up the potential of a person's direction in life, you know, you've got choices. And if you choose to go in the wrong direction, well, you're going to get the wrong results. You know, I don't tend to judge people too quickly, because, like, I'm not in their I'm not in his shoes, and you know, sometimes you have to really talk to people to know exactly, you know, where they're coming from. He may have had you know, a greater potential. But unfortunately, he was compromised. You can come back as any living being, as an insect, and a small creature. And so, for example, the Buddha made in the suttas, he talked about ascetics, Indian ascetics, sadhus, doing the ox practice, doing the dog practice, and if you really focus your mind on that and behave like an animal, behave like a dog or these creatures that they worshipped, and they believe that these kind of practices, adopting the behavior of these creatures, would actually lead to some kind of realization. I've never studied in detail, but you'll easily find it on the web. And the Buddha said in the suttas, I'm not talking off the top of my head, that when you do that, when you direct your mind towards the state of an animal, the potential to be reborn as an animal is very great. The Buddha said in the suttas, you will be reborn in the company of dogs or the company of oxen.
You'd like to be an animal, surely?
Well, who knows? You might be with a nice family, nice, wealthy, caring family.
Yeah.
Might be okay.
Or you might go to the country for nature.
Oh no.
Oh no. We'll be on to the next bar quicker again.
I'll just get the mic out, yeah?
Yeah, yeah, please, please.
Thank you very much. That's it for tonight, and thank you very much for coming, and until next week, may you all be happy and well. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Doug.